Hello, and welcome back to Think Yourself Healthy podcast. I'm your host, Heather Barbieri. Before we dive into this episode, I just want to remind you that if you take a screenshot that you're listening and tag us on Instagram, we'll send you a 15% off discount for the 8-week Retrain Your Brain program. Just take a screenshot and tag me at Heather Barbieri RDN. Thanks for listening, and let's get right to it. Hello, everybody. On today's episode of Think Yourself Healthy, we have returning guest Ashley Pataik. Today, we're going to be diving a little bit deeper into some attachment stuff that we briefly addressed in the last episode. In case you missed that, we dove deep into inner child work. Ashley is an absolute profound, amazing soul who is just really gifted at helping others take practical steps to healing their inner child. And she's also an incredible conscious parenting expert. So Ashley, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. So excited to be back. Hi, everyone.
Hello. So Ashley, this topic is really near and dear to my heart and something that is actually something I'm dealing with right now is a lot of attachment stuff. So I'm really excited to have a conversation and dive a little bit deeper into attachment. So can you explain to the audience a little bit about attachment? How do we get attached?
Yes. And so attachment is a basic human need. It is an inborn evolutionary mechanism that is within us all that basically says that we need to be in close proximity to our caregivers to survive and to build a connection, aka fit in to our family system to get all of our needs met. Because when we're young, we're completely dependent. Mm. And so we very early on create definitions of what it means to fit in, starting with our first family system. We start making estimations about which parts of us they find desirable and which parts of us they would like us to shrink or to put away. And we respond. Like we show up for the assignment. We are here and we're saying, oh, mom wants me to be quiet and not whine. Dad doesn't want me to say what I want. I'm not allowed to be mad. That stuff goes away. But they like it when I get good grades, and they like it when I look a certain way, and they like it when I talk a certain way. And so we step forward, and slowly what we do is we begin to chip away at our authenticity in the name of attachment, because that is a human need, just like water, food, and shelter. Mm-hmm. And anytime that we start to feel like our attachment is becoming threatened, we go into this like primal panic, like we would if we were starving. Our body says, oh no, danger, threat. And we start to ask ourselves, well, what do I do? And this is all very unconscious. What do I do to bring myself back to safety? How do I need to show up? Who do they need me to be? And we show up that way. We conform. And this isn't because we're weak, it's because we're crafty. It is a survival adaptation because, as I said, we're so dependent on our first family system. And we carry these identities into our adulthood very unconsciously, and they affect everything from our relationships and who we're attracted to. They affect our careers. They affect how we perceive ourselves and talk to ourselves and how we relate to our children and our partners. I mean, just everything. Mm-hmm. Our attachment systems, those early attachment lessons, are in the driver's seat throughout our life until we become conscious of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we can start to reflect and maybe create some new circuits. But it takes that consciousness of them. That's the tricky part, is becoming aware that we even have these identities at all that may not be truly us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So ultimately, this idea of attachment is something that is fundamental starting as soon as we come out of the womb. And I know for myself, I discovered that a lot of the issues that I had as an adult, specifically pertaining to relationships, romantic relationships, were based out of fear of abandonment. And at 9 months old, when my mother's brother was killed, this was a very traumatic moment in her life. And she did not have the capacity to nurture me in the way that I needed. And then my biological father, he was checked out with drugs and alcohol, so he wasn't attending to the need. So for me, I spent a reasonable amount of time having to try and self-soothe in the crib because no one in my environment had the capacity to give me what I needed. And this programmed my, my nervous system for constantly being in a state of fear that I would be alone. And unfortunately, I unintentionally sought out emotionally unavailable men as a way to justify and validate my core belief systems. And it's interesting because right now I'm seeing how attachment is showing up in different ways in my life currently. My husband is from Italy and he very, very much wants to go back to Europe. And so we are entertaining the idea of taking a very long trip or permanently, relocating. And so ultimately I am feeling a lot of discomfort and I'm like trying to get to the base of this discomfort. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why do I feel so much anxiety around this idea of leaving? And ultimately what it's boiling down to is I'm having to go through and decide what is fundamentally of essential value to me, of actual material belongings. What do I absolutely have to have versus what I don't need? Mm-hmm. And what I'm finding is that because I grew up in such a state of survival, particularly in a pretty impoverished family environment, never having my own bedroom, things of this nature, that I'm finding myself like not wanting to let go of things. I'm like making every excuse in the world, like, no, I need that. I got to keep that. But ultimately, these are things that I am holding on to as a way to feel safe and secure. And yes. It's all bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. So let's talk a little bit about that. How these attachment styles show up in so many different ways in our life.
Absolutely. Well, they show up in every aspect. And one thing that I heard you mention, first off, is how early on you felt like you were crying it out in your crib. And people will say, but Ashley, I don't remember. But guess what? What we can't remember with our logical words, before that, we remember with our body. That's why there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score. Our body stores what is safe. And so when we come into adulthood and we encounter any person, a trait, an emotion, an experience that triggers something inside of us that brought us stress as a child, it could be something we did and were punished for. It could be something that happened to us, the way others treated us. Anything that caused us stress activates our fear response system, our brainstem, right? And our amygdala and our limbic system. Like it activates those lower portions of the brain. And we respond unconsciously with some type of behavior, some type of, we yell, we cry, we lash out, we cling to things that are our attachment woobies. And we just think like, we just go about our days and we don't really question about like, why is this? And when we start to get a little bit conscious, we start to disentangle what is present and what is past. Am I living this life because me, who is me, like big capital S self, wants this? Am I living from my imagination or from my indoctrination? Am I living from my training or because this is who I truly want to be? This is who I truly am and what I truly want. And so you mentioned about relationships, how you had chosen a certain pattern. And our attraction as adults is activation from our earliest attachment lessons. We seek out the people who were like, yeah, I'm so attracted to him. I know how to be his puzzle piece because I've been that puzzle piece all my life. And sometimes when we find ourselves in that pattern, attraction actually becomes a warning sign, not like a go get it, girl. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. We've been here before. What part of you, again, the part of you like that deep knowing or that part of you that has been trained to be a certain way? And we will seek out what we are really good at being, what we learn to be, because it's familiar, and familiar feels safe even when it's dysfunctional. We will choose what feels like home even when home hurts.
Absolutely.
And so how it shows up in who, like I said, we're attracted to. It also shows up how you respond when certain things happen. We often think that other people make us mad. They hurt my feelings. They make me mad. They make me happy. They complete me. Oh, girl. Like, first off, you're already complete. You just got to remember. There's a remembering and unearthing and a remembering that is there asking you to look at it. But also, when people do things, it's not necessarily about what they're doing right now. It's about what it triggers inside of you. Those echoes from the past, those early attachment lessons, when you learned about what was safe, when you learned what it meant to be loved and to love, when you were creating internal maps about the world, and it unconsciously goes back to the file, it picks it out. Okay, this is happening. Oh, yes, I remember what this taught me. I remember what I learned. Oh, shit, I'm supposed to feel mad about that, or I'm supposed to feel sad about that, or I'm supposed to shut down, or I couldn't yell as a child, and now I'm going to let it just unfurl on you because I have spent years turning all that anger inward because I couldn't do it to my parents, but I'm not, you know, I can now do it to you because I'm a grown woman. And so we go to this file system very quickly, very automatically, very unconsciously, and we look up what we were taught back then, and we respond in ways that we were conditioned to respond. And we get into these loops. And so attachment is in the driver's seat all of our life in various forms. And it takes becoming conscious of your childhood and getting curious about, like, why do I act this way? Why do I think this way? Who was I before the world told me who I had to be? And that's tricky work. And that's why there's coaches and people who help you do that, gently holding up the mirror to you, because it can feel really heavy and scary to jump into that. And you want to do it in a trauma-informed way, because trauma is it takes skill, and it takes there's a delicate balance when you're entering trauma healing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree 100%. I know, you know, you mentioned coaching, and I am a huge advocate for individuals seeking appropriate help. I know that when I finally had enough awareness to recognize some patterns, I needed support, and I hired a inner child coach and spent quite a significant amount of time doing inner child work because it was such a foreign and uncomfortable concept for me that I needed the support. And on top of it, a lot of times, or at least this is my opinion or my experience, is that when we take responsibility for wanting to start to heal these parts of us, our families and close friends can be really opinionated and offended, very offended by you choosing to do this work. I believe that they think that it's a reflection of something they've done wrong, and they are very unsupportive of you trying to do the healing. So having an appropriate coach can be so beneficial at giving you the pillar, the, you know, foundation to have the confidence and stability around being able to dive in consistently to do this work. So I know for myself, when I started, I discovered that I had two very predominant attachment styles. They were anxious attachment and avoidant attachment. And as soon, you know, and now in my present moment, I will recognize, oh, that's the avoidant part of me trying to come out. Oh, that's the anxious part of me. I tend to lean more towards the anxious component, although I scored very high in both areas. So let's talk to the audience a little bit. For many people, they're completely unaware of what their attachment style or styles are. So would you be so kind to kind of just do a brief introduction about the different attachment styles?
Yeah. So John Bowlby had this idea, whereas Freud said our problems are unconscious, Bowlby says they're relational. And so then Mary Ainsworth, she takes his ideas and she really puts them into action, right? And so she does this study where I'm not going to go into the whole study, but I'm going to give you like the SparkNotes version, which will help you understand where these attachment forms come from. And so she does this study where she puts a baby in a room with lots of toys. And then mom comes in and she observes what happens when mom comes in. And then a stranger comes in and they observe what happens when a stranger comes in. They observe what happens when a stranger comes in and mom leaves. What does the baby do then? And then they observe what happens when mom returns, okay? And based upon the responses of the baby at various stages throughout this, they start to come up with classifications. There's the secure attachment. So when mom leaves, maybe baby's a little upset, but then the baby goes out and explores the safe base. You know, they leave their safe base and they can explore. And when mom comes back, you know, they feel comforted by mom. And so, and then there's three insecure attachment types. And so the secure attachment is what we all strive for, what we hope to give to our kids, what maybe wasn't given to us, what probably wasn't given to our parents. It's what we're all striving for. And this is like the reparenting work because it's a sign of our evolution. And so you had mentioned that, you know, family can get really defensive and it's because they enter their own shame cycle with their own fear patterns. And it's not meant to don't deter your inner child work because other people are in their shame stories. So we have the secure attachment. If your parents were attuned to your needs, physical and emotional, they gave you love and you felt like you were a valuable part of the family. You weren't punished or shamed or blamed. You really felt supported. Then you grow into adults who learns to communicate, who learns to trust, who respects other people's boundaries and can set your own, but also can share and voice your wants and needs. Like, you know who you are and you show up in the world and you attract people who are authentic too. It's like winning the lottery, the emotional lottery. Okay. Most of us are striving to return to that like authentic type of connection within ourselves and with others. And now three insecure types. You mentioned the anxious type. The anxious type is when you grow up in a home where your caregivers, they're inconsistent. Maybe they'll nurture you at some points, but then at other points, they're dismissive. They'll blame you for their feelings and make you responsible. You make me so mad. If you only could get it together, then I would feel happier. Things would be easier. And so they kind of yo-yo back and forth between being nurturing and not. And you become hypervigilant to read their moods, to know who you had to be and how big you could be and how small you should be. And so you grow up to be an adult, and your deepest fear is abandonment and rejection. And so you might feel clingy or jealous. You will blame yourself for the problems in the relationship. You have a hard time trusting. Okay, so anxious. There's also avoidant. Avoidant is when your parents, this is very much my husband, you are meant to be raising yourself. Like, they were very removed emotionally and maybe even physically. They expected you to be independent, to meet your own needs. Maybe they felt really frustrated or annoyed or just straight up pissed when you did actually feed them. And so these kids learn very early on to be independent, to keep everyone at arm's length away. These are the people who people might say are emotionally unavailable because they're not going to share those emotional parts with you. In fact, they might even forget that they have emotional parts of them. Mm-hmm. And these people, they're hard to open up. And oddly enough, anxious types and avoidant types tend to attract each other. Okay. And so lastly, we have the disorganized type. The disorganized type is a little bit of a mix of anxious and avoidant. And this is really when there was a lot of trauma, neglect, abuse. It could be these people want love. Okay. Mm-hmm. They want love, but they're terrified of it. They're terrified of it. And so they will bring you in and they will put themselves in, and then all of a sudden they panic and they start to push away, or what some might say, self-sabotage. And so their behavior seem very disorganized because their childhood was very disorganized. The people who were supposed to protect them most, you know, they were a source of love and pain, and big pain. And so they become very anxious as adults, poor emotional intelligence. Again, they fear rejection. And again, they become very clingy, and then they'll push you away. And it's really hard for partners to read how this disorganized attachment is going to play out from moment to moment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Ooh, lots of familiarity there. Woo! Yeah. I do not feel attacked at all.
I don't. Is anyone else sweating?
Yeah, I'm like, woo! It's getting hot in here. I don't know. Maybe this is just menopause. But yeah, and I love the fact that you mentioned that anxious attracts the avoidant, because that is definitely a pattern that has played out very often for me. And even in my current relationship, I see how my current husband is way more avoidant, which makes me extremely anxious, because I'm like, no, I need to know now. And he needs his space and he needs times to process. And that creates a lot of discomfort and panic for me. However, I recognize how this is actually happening for me, and it's helping mm-hmm. to force me into a circumstance where, number one, I have to trust, I have to honor the boundary, I have to allow the space. And as I have to go through that discomfort, it forces me to have to be very aware and mindful of the narrative and the self-talk that's mm-hmm. running on, you know, in the background. And that allows me an opportunity to redirect or self-correct that dialogue in a way that supports me into feeling safer, so that yeah. I can sit through that disease, right? And allow it to play out in the way that it is supposed to. So I constantly have to remind myself, this is happening for me, not to me. To be patient, to have compassion, and ultimately it's allowing me an opportunity to apply all of the knowledge and skills that I have acquired up to this point in my journey, and trust in that. And that creates validation and safety and security that allows me to keep continuing that reparenting and mm-hmm. moving forward.
So, it's experiments of trust. It's like, your big self has to learn to trust all of its different parts, and that mm-hmm. and all the different parts need to learn to trust the big self, which is who you all authentically are. And when we get pulled out of that authentic self, all these other parts start to take over, and they start to assume different positions that they weren't meant to assume. And so what I hear you saying is you're taking these small experiments. And yes, they're uncomfortable. And yes, it might feel unfamiliar, but your authentic self is like giving a message to the other parts. We're going to just try these little experiments. And I get that you don't fully trust me yet, but we'll get there. Mm-hmm. And you will, once the various parts of you start to recognize that the authentic you has returned and can be trusted, then everyone is able to kind of resume what the role that they were meant for. And those really loud ones that tend to come out as those protective behaviors, mm-hmm. They quiet down a little bit. They're able to just take a breath and mm-hmm. take a seat at the table without overpowering the CEO, which is really you, your authentic self.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really great advice. Very good advice. So it's interesting, you know, because every day is a learning experience. And if we, you know, there's so much stigma around this idea of healing and having an end point with it. And I've been on this journey for 30 years now of really, really, there's moments where I've fallen back asleep and kind of slipped back into periods of self-sabotage, we'll call it. But ultimately, I recognize how that self-sabotage was actually serving a purpose. And it was me seeking the evidence that I needed to, you know, validate the core belief. And those core beliefs were very much conditioned, limiting beliefs that I inherited yeah. from others and the environment. So one of the best things that I personally did for myself, and I did this work in 2018 going through 2019, I created an owner's manual. I like to call it the owner's manual for myself. And I literally locked myself up for quite some time and forced myself to have to identify all of the patterns that have not supported me in the ways that I desired. And so once I was able to identify all of these different patterns, and then I was able to identify the reaction to the trigger based on these patterns, it allowed me to basically put together this owner's manual of who I was based on my trauma response. Mm. And then from there, I was able to take that and expand upon it and identify what my actual needs were in order to continue to work through those patterns in a supportive way for my evolution without my partner feeling responsible for that. And yeah. So it was really interesting because when I initially met my husband, it was early 2021 that I started to pull away. Mm. And I literally went into complete, like, I just stopped responding. I was like, oh, I like it. I like him too. You're much. Yep. I totally ghosted this dude. Okay. Like totally ghosted him. And so for 3 weeks, I was using his lack of reaching out to me as the validation, the evidence that I needed to prove, yep, that was a waste of time. This isn't worth it. And it was really funny because I was with a group of friends and I was literally, you know, bitching to one of my guy friends as we're driving to Joshua Tree for this really incredible, you know, self-healing weekend. And I get a phone call from him and he's like, what is your problem? I don't understand you. Like you just went away. I don't know what to do. And then that was what I needed. Like I needed to be called out. And what's even funnier is prior to this 3 weeks of ghosting, my intuitive self kept whispering and saying, it's time to show him the owner's manual. And I was like, no, no, no. If I show him the owner's manual, then that's too much. I'm going to be way too much.
He won't buy the car.
Exactly. The car. I'm like, there's no way I can expose myself like that. So after this incident, we had agreed that when I got back from this little trip that we would talk. And so what I decided was it was time to show the owner's manual and just have full transparency, full authenticity, and take responsibility for who I was and what I needed. So I sent him the owner's manual and said to him, I don't expect you to respond right now. I want you to take your time and really, you know, go through this. And then let's plan a meetup so that we can discuss it and kind of see where we're at. So we took about a week, got together, and it was so cute because I remember him saying, so I read your
got her book.
And I was like, oh yeah? Okay, fuck, moment of truth.
You're like,
and
I'm like,
woo, right? Like, and he looks at me and he says, I think I can do it. And I was like, what? Okay, that's not what I was expecting. But in the end, for me, I feel like this was such a valuable use of my time to really have the ability to reflect and go very deep within all that I've acquired and learned over the last 30 years, and being able to recognize the patterns and where I have personal responsibility. I think that a lot of times when we go through this healing work and we're trying to reparent the inner child, we like to put the responsibility on others. We want to make others responsible for how we ultimately feel. And it's not fair. And it's absolutely 100% wrong in the sense that that's not how we get where we want to go.
And it's exhausting because you won't get where you want to go because you don't control other people's thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. You control your own. And when you get your shit in alignment, you inspire other people to do the same. And those who aren't willing to step up with you, they fall off because they weren't meant for your journey any longer. You know, that soul contract might be done. Yeah. And, you know, and it's, I love hearing your story with you and your husband. Because Brandon, my husband, is more of an avoidant. And I am more of an anxious. And our beginning of our relationship was like, when I first met him, I looked in his eyes and I knew that my soul had known him time and time again. Mm-hmm. I don't really believe in like love and first sight. And I'm not going to call it that because I don't think it was. I liked his muscles. I liked how easy it was to talk to him. But that look, that knowing in his eyes was like what kept drawing me back. And we would come together and our defenses then would come up and he would shut down and then I would feel rejected and I could be saucy and wounding with my words. And then he would shut down more and then, you know, and round we'd go. And I will just share this one story that is really sweet. We both had hit our breaking point and I hit it first. And I said, I can't be with a robot. I'm so emotionally expressive. I love you. I just can't be with someone who like is a wall. And I said, I get why you are the way you are. I truly do. But it's just, it's so hard for me. Like so I was like, I need you to get your stuff and I need you to get out of my house by the time I return back from Schnucks. And so like we just got back from a big trip where I met a bunch of his family and I was just so heartbroken. And because I just thought like this trip is going to be the thing that fixes us or changes it. And we were only dating like 6 months at this point. So I go to Schnucks and when I come out, there's a note on my window and it's from him. And it says, I know that I don't always say and do the right things. I know I can't put into words how I'm feeling, but I'm trying every day because I love you. Don't give up on me, your B. And I was like, oh shit, come back. And when we were great, but then things got so great that I became to fear the other shoe dropping. And I began to, what some might say, self-sabotage. I began to push him away and I was so scared to lose what felt so good. And isn't it funny that we will go in an attempt to protect ourselves, these parts will say, you know what, this is too good, push it away. Or this can't last forever. And so you go into these narratives and anytime something happens, you affirm those beliefs. Oh, see, this could hurt. And I know what I've been taught about hurt and I don't want to go there. I don't know that I even trust authentic love because I don't know that I've ever actually received it. So anyways, and then there was one night where he came to me and he's like, I'm putting myself out there and you're pushing me away and I can't do that anymore. So you need to make a decision. Are you in knowing that it's a risk or are you ready to walk away? I don't want to walk away, but like, I can't keep doing this. And I took some time to think about it. And I said, I won't let my past wounding trample what could be my future, like what could be my future happiness? What is my present happiness? And needless to say, we've been on the self-growth journey together in various ways. And I'm so glad that I didn't let my early attachment lessons continue to play out. Mm-hmm. But we do that. And I had done that in previous relationships time and time again. And so I just, you know, we have two different experiences, but it just goes to show how these attachment lessons influence who we are. And we truly are in the driver's seat. We are not our wounding. We can choose to be in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm. You are so absolutely correct. And honestly, I don't feel like our circumstances are too different. I think that we have very similar pathways. You know, it seems that our relationship dynamics are very similar. And I have always been conditioned for the love bombing, where early on in the relationship, it's hot and heavy. They're, you know, I want to be your boyfriend or I want to marry you. And it's just, you know, not, you know, constantly texting and constantly needing to be with you. And so when I entered into this dynamic and his self-sufficiency and lack of constant need to be involved in my everyday decision-making and, you know, everything, I was seeking the evidence that proved to my brain, oh, this guy is not into me, right? Like this guy is not into me. He's not about this. And so that created a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety for myself, which was quite debilitating, to be perfectly honest. And there was a point in the relationship. So him and I have a pretty interesting dynamic because being that he is not from the United States and we started dating and then the visa whole situation and citizenship came up, we had to make a decision. Okay, well, the only option for us to try and continue to do this is to get married so that we can at least give it a chance. And right. So that in itself was really challenging because for me, you know, this whole relationship was complete opposite of what I had ever experienced. And being that he's more emotionally closed off and I'm very similar to you, I'm all out there, you know, I am so emotionally expressive and he's not. And so when there's that silence, that creates discomfort because there I am making up my stories, based on my past circumstances. And him and I had conversations and he had said to me, it takes time. Like it takes time for me to open up and trust and, you know, divulge who I truly am. And I remember feeling very impatient and very much a little bitch, to be perfectly honest, like, no, you're going to do it on my terms and I need it now. And I remember him saying, you know, like it takes a really long time. And I'm being very impatient, very selfish. And I was having a conversation with a girlfriend and I was like, you know, like what, like 5 years? And she looks at me and she said, maybe that's really what he needs, Heather. Maybe he does need 5 years. And that smacked me in the face so hard. It made me really realize, like, who am I to say how long? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And that really forced me into a position where I had to let go of the expectation. And so this whole idea of attachment for him and I entering into our marriage, you know, the attachment piece has been such a big part of it because I don't really know where it will go, how long it will last. You know, maybe this is just a circumstance for a time period to help us both evolve in certain ways. But no matter what, it's a gift. And I have to appreciate it as much as I can on a daily basis for however long it lasts. And maybe it will be an eternity. But I think many of us set that expectation. This is forever, right? Like, right. No, this is forever. And that's why so many of us are so miserable in unhealthy relationships and marriages and feel stuck. It's because we're truly attached to the outcome or the expectation of the outcome rather than being able to be present and really take in every day the gifts that are presented to us to help support the evolution and the healing process.
And setting expectations for other people is just a distraction instead of just setting expectations for yourself, because again, we don't control them, but we feel a little less scared when we feel that we have a sense of control. And if we can't control all the stuff that's happening in here, I might be able to control him. And so we set these expectations and to affirm these beliefs that we have. And I promise you, when you set expectations for somebody else, you will likely feel disappointed or frustrated, maybe resentful. And so I've really worked on setting expectations for myself, like making promises to myself, really focusing on turning that gaze inward. Because I feel like when I'm looking outward constantly, it's just a distraction for me. And with my husband, I had told myself, well, we just don't have any, like, Zaza Zoo, as Gary Bradshaw would say, like, we just don't have the passion. Because what felt like home for me from my earliest years and that had played out in all previous relationships is you love hard and you fight hard. And my husband said, I will love you hard, but I will not fight with you hard. Oh, you're not going to fight for me? Oh, you're not going to fight for this relationship? Oh, you just must not care. And when you say it out loud now, you're like, God, I was fucked up. But this is real life. And we do this. And I can feel it in my body as I even say it, that heaviness of like, he won't fight for me. So, but he was, by not engaging into my pattern, he was fighting for us. He was just saying, I'm not going to love you one moment and then call each other innuendous names or do whatever and then have great sex. And then, I mean, there will be great sex, but not in that order. He's like, I won't fight with you hard that way. And so I had set all these expectations of how he should respond when X, Y, and Z happens. But when I turned it inward to say, well, why does this feel like home? This love hard, fight hard. And what part of me wants to keep this alive? Does any part of me want to keep this alive? Okay, no, because that doesn't feel good. So what is a new way of loving? And I feel like there's very few people in my life who've loved me unconditionally, no strings attached. And my husband is one of them. And it's taken me a long time to say that I am one of them. And if I can, I'd love to share 9 common limiting beliefs that tend to develop for all of us. This came not from me. This is from the Jai Institute. They've done lots of studies and they've compiled a list of 9. And so I would love for readers to listen to see what resonates with you. And I wish I could say that I have them memorized, but I don't. So I'm just going to listen. Okay.
No shame in that.
There's a lot of shit on my mind.
No shame in that whatsoever.
All right. So here they are. Here's the first one. I am bad. I am wrong. I am inherently defective. 2, I am unlovable and unworthy of unconditional love. 3, I am not enough and undeserving of goodness and care. 4, I have nothing special to offer. I am no one. 5, I am incapable. I am helpless. I am a failure. Next one is, I am alone. I don't make sense. I am crazy. And the next, I am heartless. I am mean and unfeeling. 8, feeling is not safe. Intimacy is unsafe. And lastly, I don't matter. Life is pointless. I don't care. Ooh. We'll take a deep breath together.
I wish I could say that none of those resonated, but as you were reading those, I could feel the core conditioning within me going, oh, that feels right. That feels familiar. The reality is none of us Well, I shouldn't say none of us. I would say that most of society can probably relate to majority, if not all nine of those belief systems, whether it was something that was programmed in their home environment or from the indoctrination of society.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we start off trying to fit into our family system. And then we try to fit in to society. And then we try to fit in to maybe friendships. And then we try to fit in to our relationships. And we're always trying to be the right puzzle piece for everyone but ourselves. And understanding these limiting beliefs, I could start to hear them when I was coming up. And so, like, if I had a situation that I felt an emotional reaction to, a strong emotional reaction, I, at the end of the day, would sit down and like journal, like, what happened? What did I feel? And where did I feel it in my body? So bringing in some somatic experiencing. And what were my belief systems, these nine limiting beliefs that I held about myself? And what was I believing about the other person in that moment? And like, going through, I have a 7-step trigger worksheet, and I would like do this worksheet myself. And it ends with giving my inner child an affirming message and then giving an affirming message to the other person, because I do believe that we're all doing the best we can with the tools, the resources that we have. And we're all on the same spiritual path of growing our souls and learning lessons. I mean, life is school for the soul. And we're all in different places on that journey. I mean, right?
It's funny that you say that, because I literally said to my husband last night, like, what the fuck was my higher self truly thinking when I decided to incarnate here with all of these lessons? And I said, and the way that I summed this up in the end was, I must really be a super badass up in the spiritual realm for me to have so much confidence to be like, oh yeah, add that one to the list. Oh, I want that one too. Yeah, you better believe I got that. And I'm going, seriously, all in one lifetime? Like, how confident of a soul was I to be able to stack up this kind of itinerary, right? With this idea that I would have the capacity to remember who I was, why I came here, to overcome these lessons and be able to help shift the paradigm of humanity in the right direction. Yeah. And so it's funny, because I literally was just saying that last night, like, what the fuck, man?
I mean,
we are amazing.
We are. And when we zoom out and take a bird's eye view, all of the labels that we casted on ourselves, that have been casted onto us, that we cast onto other people, like, that is not who we truly are. We are spiritual beings. And I don't want to get too spiritual and religious, but I will say, the way that I view things, like, I don't see spirituality as a hierarchy. I don't believe that, like, God is necessarily something I have to praise to, because God is around me and within me, and I am God looking in and out at myself. Like, I am a divine being at my core, and that helps me remember. Like, that helps me, like, oh, does this line up with me being a divine being? Well, then no, I possibly couldn't be bad, wrong, or broken, because that doesn't line up with my true self, which is a soul. You
that's
know,
I can't sovereignty.
Possibly, yeah. I can't that's... possibly be unworthy and
broken.
My life couldn't possibly be pointless, because I was sent here. So, you know what? Return to sender. Mm-hmm. I'm a sovereign being. I don't accept those narratives anymore for me. Yeah. Like, nope. That's not
goals.
My karmatic shit.
Goals.
I teach my boys how to do this. I say, anytime we do two energy clearing, different kinds of energy clearings. At the beginning of the day, we activate our light bubble. So we touch the top of our head and imagine a white light. And so only good shit comes in. Like, you know, everything else like ping falls off. But at the end of the day, we scan our bodies with our hands front and back. And we say, I release anything that doesn't belong to me. And then we touch the earth or the ground to transmute it front and back. And I release anything that does belong to me and no longer serves me. And we touch the ground. And, you know, those kinds of practices may not be for anyone, but there is a shift. I feel the shift. I know that my boys feel a shift. And there's something really empowering about saying all of that muck, I'm just going to give it to Mother Earth. I trust her to transmute it because it's slowing me down in my soul journey. That's like having my wheels spinning in the mud. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't want to have to relive all the same shit next time by not figuring it out this time. So I don't have time for the mud.
You got it. Absolutely. That's so beautiful that you have, you know, that you have an opportunity to teach your children the way that it's supposed to be. In my opinion, I think that part of society's traumatic mental state, anxiety-ridden beings, has everything to do with the fact that we are not living authentically to our true selves. And we're living up to these expectations that were never meant to be ours. We spend an entire lifetime defending these limiting beliefs that were never ours to begin with. And it takes true courage to say, maybe that's not for me. Maybe I can teach myself. Maybe I have the ability to reparent and learn something else. And in my opinion, I feel that that's the movement we're in.
Yeah,
that is part of this. That's part of this evolutionary shift that we're going through right now, which is why there's so much turmoil. We have to bring it all to the surface to have awareness and then have the ability to choose radical responsibility based on how we want to feel and where we want to go as a society, as, you know, humanity continues to evolve. Otherwise, we will be creating extinction very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's the phoenix. You let it all burn, all the shit that doesn't serve you, to rebuild. And we have gotten really good at numbing the knowing. And the knowing is that which lives inside of us. And we're constantly gazing outward. And we feed that numbness by looking out and saying, well, if I just had this house, or if I just had this, or if I just drink this, or if I take that. And it keeps the numbing real. Like, it keeps the knowing small, the internal knowing. And unfortunately, I believe that we have a society that's meant to keep that knowing small and quiet, because that's easier to manage from the outside, right?
Absolutely.
And so when we start to reclaim sovereignty and say, you know what, I hear actually a little whisper, and we start listening to that whisper gets louder and louder and louder. And then we become the thing that they fear the most. We become sovereign beings who get to share our thoughts, wants, and needs. We get to set boundaries. We get to step into our authentic self, which gives future generations and past generations and current generations the ability to then reclaim their freedom, or to maintain it for our younger ones. Like, when we step in, we send ripples forward and back. And I will tell you that, like, one of the things that I tell my boys so often is, you are allowed to ask what you want and need to anyone, even adults. Mm-hmm. And there may be a boundary, and you'll have choices to make, and they'll have choices, but you never have to stop asking for what you want and need.
That's so incredible. I honor you and the work that you're doing, and the children that you're raising, and the parents that you're helping to support, so they have the capacity to do the same. So I can't believe that our time is coming to a end. I'm like, how did we already go through almost an hour? So before I let you go, I would love for you to share with the audience three of your best tips to breaking the cycle of fitting in, so that we can return to our authentic selves. Give me three of your best practices to support others with breaking that cycle?
I would say the first is just to become aware. And when I say aware, that sounds like an easy thing, but it's not. Notice your patterns. Notice when you tend to yell. Notice when, and write them down. Today, my son did this and I felt pissed. Today, my husband did this and I felt, frustrated. My house looks like this and I felt overwhelmed. You'll start to notice some themes, okay? And with that awareness, not only writing down what happened, but just notice what you felt. So what happened? What did I feel? Where did I feel it in the body? And what was my belief system? What did I think about me? What did I think about the other person? This is just awareness. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to fix it. Just become aware. I'd say the second step is get comfortable with the quiet. Lock yourself in a room for 5 to 10 minutes with everything off. And I promise you, you'll sit on your ass. And the first several times you do it, maybe 100 times you do it, I don't know, you'll be redecorating your living room and you'll be like mentally, you'll be planning dinner for later. You'll be thinking about all the things you did or didn't do that are on your growing to-do list. But I promise you, if you learn to sit there long enough, you'll start to hear the whisper. Mm-hmm. And the whisper is you. Mm-hmm. And when you learn how to do that and listen to the whisper, when you're by yourself amongst all your clothes on the floor in your closet, you will learn how to listen to that knowing when you're out in the world. And you will be making decisions, not from your training, but from your authentic self. Okay. So we're aware, we're learning to listen. And I would say lastly, giving gratitude to your inner child. This is, a lot of times we think we want to exile the inner child and all her protective responses, but the truth is she already is exiled. Mm-hmm. That is why it's like in the shadows, the shadow work, the inner child work. So give her thanks. As you start to notice these patterns, you'll start to understand why she had to adapt the way she was. Like, why did all these patterns make sense for me? Like, why did she have to get curious about her? Why did she have to shift and adapt this way? And then I just want to give her thanks, because thank you for your years of service. You have gotten me here. I see that you were so crafty. You taught me how to shut down so I wouldn't get spanked. You saved me. And yes, I'm going to be making small experiments in the future, because I do think there's a part of me that my voice needs to be heard, wants to be heard, but I see why you did it. And I'm grateful to you. Thank you. Thank you. Really just understanding why she or he, or however you identify, why that child self had to shift the way she did, knowing that they did that to protect you, and then give gratitude to her. Let her know that she is seen, heard, and validated from you as the adult. And I think those three things there start to create a ripple in your life. And it creates a ripple to the people who touch your life. And before you know it, you have redesigned a new life from your authentic center. Not from your training, not from your indoctrination, but from who you truly are. And that, to me, like, that is gold.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Literally, absolute gold. This is the foundation for self-transformation. And if you can choose to give yourself permission to go through those steps, it may take longer for some than others, but regardless, you will end up where you are meant to be. And that is the best gift we can ever give ourselves. Ashley, as always, it has been such a pleasure to chat with you today. You always provide such practical, encouraging advice for the listeners. So for those that might have some questions or are ready to be like, I'm ready to dive in, I'm ready to do this, I need the support, what's the best way for them to contact you?
You can visit my website. It's parentsdoingbetter.com. You can email me, hello@parentsdoingbetter.com. I would say those are the two best ways to reach me. And just know that wherever you are in your journey, like, it's never too late to rewire the circuits. Like, our brain is always, always amenable for rewiring. And this journey is tricky, but it helps when you're in a community of like-minded people who are nurturing you as you move along. And so that is essentially what doing better is about. It's not about shaming. It's about our evolution. And so come join the community.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for all that you do. And I believe we're going to have a part three.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ash. Bye. You're amazing. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Think Yourself Healthy podcast. Do me a favor, and if you loved this episode, please go leave a review. Reviews help make sure that this content reaches more people so that we can continue to heal as a collective. Remember to take a screenshot that you're listening and tag us on Instagram at Heather Barbieri RDN for a 15% discount on the Retrain Your Brain program. See you next time.